Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others. Introducing you to wellness professionals ready to inform, assist and inspire. Today's topic is, I returned from Egypt a different woman. My guest is Belinda Brasnell, angel medium, author and yoga practitioner from Funnabale Park. Welcome back on the show, Belinda.
Hello, Maria. It's so nice to be here.
And to our listeners, after our conversation, it will be fun question time. Belinda, for those who haven't heard our other podcasts, could you tell us a little about yourself and your work?
Yes, so I am an angelic medium mainly. I give people messages from their angels and their loved ones. I also do messages from animals and nature. I am an author and a yoga teacher, and I have a passion for channeling meditations from spirit. And I just live my life and try and coordinate my life with healing and the challenges that my body has accepted as its path in this life.
Yeah, which gives a lot of depth to your work, I think.
Well, to me, it's just my normal. But yes, I do have to inspire myself a lot. And I do hope to live that as an example. So when I do struggle to do something and climb into a pyramid, while I'm actually not in the state to climb into a pyramid, but I do it anyway. So I hope to inspire people to not miss out on life. You know, there's ways to do things.
You take groups on sacred pilgrimages to Ireland and Scotland, but your trip to Egypt at the end of 2024 was quite a different matter. Tell us how this trip came about.
Well, I am in communication with the lady that organized the trip to Egypt. As a pilgrimage facilitator, I'm not really interested in going to places like Peru or Egypt or the places that everybody wants to go. I always say I don't like to go to hot, poor countries because I live in one. That sounds a bit egocentric, but I don't deal well with heat. So I like to go to Europe, and a lot of my past lives come from that area. So, but I just go where the angels tell me to go. So I was in contact with the lady, and she was asking me about a possible reading for a friend. And we spoke a bit about my Ireland trip, and I asked her about her Egypt trip, which was just postponed. And I asked her to send me the information. And so I thought, wow, this looks really nice, but it's very expensive. And I sent it to my best friend, who was going through, she was experiencing a very traumatic year with the loss of her husband. And her life changing completely. And she said to me, this is what I need. I need this. And she said to me, are we going to go? I said, oh, yes. And I've become that yes woman. Due to my health, is, you know, you don't know how long you've got. You don't know how long you can walk. So just do it now. And that's how it came about. I just said yes, and that was it.
Did the itinerary excite you?
You know, I'm weird like that. I'm not somebody who likes to read a lot or study something beforehand. So I like to go into things blindly and just go and experience. So, I mean, a trip, it was almost 3 weeks. That excited me. Like, get me out of here. Let's go. But the itinerary did turn out really amazing.
Did embarking on this trip require courage, apart from knowing that you would have to struggle with the heat?
Well, yes, because last year, as the year before, I think the last 2 years has been very intense with my health. and physical pain throughout my body as I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And it's been quite a journey. So just to get up a flight of stairs in a mall is really a challenge. So everything takes courage for me. Just getting up in the morning takes courage. But I think where I go with a friend and where I know I'll be taken care of and there's other people in control, it's not a journey where I am the facilitator. So I just went to go and experience. And I decided beforehand, you know, I'm not going to be the psychic on this trip. Mm. I'm just going to be a normal lady on her own journey and just experience my psychic abilities for myself. So in a way, yes, I had to be very courageous physically, but emotionally, no. I just went with open arms to experience and to enjoy myself.
And you say you decided not to go as a psychic, but did you go with the intention of experiencing a deep spiritual journey?
Yes. I think I mean that I didn't go to be a psychic for others. Mm. You know, I could stand back and I wouldn't interfere in the other ladies' program or whatever. I didn't even really allow people to unload onto me. I sort of held back. They never, until the end, they didn't really know who I was or what I did.
Mm.
So, you know, I didn't proclaim it and I didn't have to use it in a way. But yes, you know, you always need that time for you. And we all have that spiritual connection. But when you're busy with other people, you tend to not always experience for yourself to the extent that you can.
True. Now, I'm curious about something practical. Did you buy special clothes to take along?
No, I couldn't afford to. But we were joking, my friend and I, because she found a lady in Randfontein that was selling these dresses. It's basically just long dresses, you know, very easy to sew. It was very cheap, and she said she's going to buy some of those to take along because it was winter in Egypt, but still quite warm.
Mm.
And I agreed to take two of these dresses. But for the rest, you know, I remember actually that we were joking on Facebook as to how extravagant or dramatic we were going to dress, you know. And the lady that was organizing the trip wrote, "There, you can just wear your own South African shorts." And I said, please, we are trying to be dramatic.
Yeah, I saw those dresses in the photographs. That's why I asked you this question.
We did buy some over there.
Oh.
Because it's very cheap to buy the dresses when you come to the right shops where people don't take advantage of you. Mm. So the Egyptian dresses are beautiful. So, but most of the shawls and everything I brought from South Africa that I usually don't use here. So people don't know me wearing things like that. But there in the heat, it sort of makes sense to keep the heat and the sun off of you. You just sort of wrap it around your head. And it does make you feel a bit ethereal and goddess-like.
Mm.
So it was quite easy to fit into that image of Egypt.
Yeah. Tell us about flying out from South Africa.
The trip. From the beginning, I felt really loved and taken care of by spirit. Because something that a lot of people don't realize is that miracles don't just drop on you. You have to become excited about things. You have to plan something, say yes to something. And the angels constantly remind me, if you're not excited about something, you are not using the miracle energy. You are not inviting miracles to happen. So this whole trip was quite a treat because in the end it came as a gift. And the flight out as well, we had extra leg room but the flight from Africa to Doha was quite long. And we were joking about our extra leg room. We didn't realize we had South African men behind us going for rugby somewhere.
Oh.
So my friend and I, we were joking and we were dancing around with our legs in the extra leg room. And then the guy behind us said, in Afrikaans, you really don't have to do that.
Oh.
And we started joking with each other. So it was quite fun. And then as a surprise, last minute, my friend upgraded us to first class for the short flight to Egypt, to Cairo. And oh my goodness, yes, we did act like people that wasn't used to anything. I actually felt bad at how well we were treated, you know. But it puts you into a different perspective as to how little you believe for yourself. So I realized how easily we feel that we do not deserve to be treated like we're special. We never allow ourselves to feel that vibration of being worthy. So the flight was amazing. The food was amazing.
And when did you meet the group you were going to travel with?
We landed in Cairo, I think about mid-afternoon, and we went to our room, and then we saw on the WhatsApp group that some of the ladies were downstairs in the hotel at one of the bars. So we met them there. It wasn't everybody yet. Some of them were still arriving during the night because we started with the trip on the next day. And yeah, it was interesting. But lots of people from Canada and Australia, one lady from the US, and then there were one more lady from South Africa. So we were quite an interesting, diverse group.
And the lady who organized the group, is she local or is she from overseas?
No, Michelle is also from South Africa.
Oh.
She's done trips to Egypt before. And then she also does other trips. She's doing one to Japan now. So other trips than what I do.
Mm. Did you enjoy traveling with the group?
You know, when my best friend and I get together, it's all about fun. So we had so much fun. And the group was beautiful. Everybody had the spiritual side, but also the fun side, the pain side. And because it's Egypt, and the first thing that you are supposed to pack is Imodiums.
Oh, dear.
We all had interesting experiences, but it was amazing to see how everybody got together to support each other and with understanding and compassion. So it was truly a beautiful, amazing group. And I met a lot of people whom I know their soul from past lives. Julie from Toronto, actually, she sat across the table from me that first evening. And when she said her name, I looked at her and I said to her, "Where have you been all my life?" And I thought I was actually joking, but it turned out I was not. We connected on such a fun level. We just went crazy the whole tour, dancing and being ridiculous. It was amazing.
What were your first impressions of Egypt as a country?
You know, we went with certain expectations of what you hear. So you know about the hardship. Lots of people that have been to Egypt told us, you know, there's lots of animals everywhere, everything is suffering, people are poor. So, and because we are very sensitive to the hardship of animals and people, you know, we sort of went prepared to try and experience it, but not to take it on. And Cairo was that. Cairo was the Egypt that I expected, and I didn't like it. And I thought, okay, let's just do this. Let's just get through this. and with the pyramids and everything, it's very commercialized. So Cairo was that. It's not a place that I would choose to go back to. But then when you wander out and you go to Luxor, as soon as you enter Luxor, we had to fly there. As soon as you enter that town, it's just a whole different planet. You just feel that beautiful feminine energy, and it's right on the Nile. And now you need to understand, I thought the Nile would be like the Ganges River in India, very polluted, and you don't get close to it, and all of that. And we were going on a Daibia, a boat, on the River Nile for 4 days. And I just prepared myself to get through that 4 days. But, oh my goodness, the Nile changed my life forever. No matter the other spiritual experiences I had, those 4 days on the Nile shifted something inside of me that I cannot explain. It's like the true feminine mother energy. And I just felt held every day as the boat gently floated down that river every day. And I just felt that serenity and the beauty of the animals on the riverbanks and the people and the men working on the boat. That is the Egypt experience that I need.
Belinda, how did you find the landscape or landscapes?
When you land in Cairo, when you fly over Cairo, it's just dust. Well, I think it was dust. Maybe it's a bit of pollution as well, probably. And all the buildings are like a mud color. It's like a mud city. It's just there in the middle of the desert with a couple of pyramids. And you can see the sun, but it's a bit hazy. It's really flat. But then when you get to the Nile River and you experience a bit of mountains, because on the west bank is the Valley of the Kings, the mountains in which they dug into to create the tombs. And it becomes something different. And then we went into the desert where you have these beautiful, solid, lonely mountains, each standing on their own. But when you climb that mountain, it's full of fossils because it used to be under an ocean 50 million years ago. And you look over that landscape and you just know that Earth is eternal. It's so ancient, we cannot comprehend. And I can't begin to think what the rest of Egypt might be like. I heard stories about Alexandria that's on the Mediterranean Sea and that's completely different. So I can't tell you about everything. I just realized I don't actually know anything about Egypt. What you know is basically what you see in Cairo, and the rest is a surprise.
Was it easy to communicate wherever you went?
No. No, the people are very Arabic. They're all Arabs, so they don't necessarily speak English. But we had a great guide, and we had an Egyptologist. He's a professor from the university, Muhammad, that guided us and translated everything. And in some of the places, like the markets, people can speak some basic English, but not really. So it wasn't easy to communicate, even with our cameraman. Like in the middle of the trip, I basically showed him, get an app on your phone. Get a translate app on your phone that we can talk. And he did that. And from there, you know, you can talk into the phone and it translates to him. And that was so wonderful for him because he felt so excluded and he couldn't understand anything we were saying. We couldn't understand anything that he was saying. So, you know, there are these barriers And I think a big thing that also restricts communication is background culture and religion. Because if you don't understand the way of the Muslims and the way they perceive the world, it's a different world. They don't know about Star Wars or Netflix, or maybe there are some of them, but the ones that I experienced, you know, they just don't. It's not part of the world. And we had to perceive in the way that men treated us, which was different in different spaces. But some, even like waiters, didn't have a lot of respect for us as women. But I think it's also because we didn't understand their culture and how to handle things necessarily. You are so used to being a Western woman and that you can do what you want and say what you want. And to some of them, it's just unthought of. So it depended on where we were. In Siwa, in the desert, the women don't even come out of the house. You don't see women on the street. So it's basically men. And then when you are in the shops, like we were in a shop where we bought some spices and they sell hair products and things like that and chocolates. And I was standing in the queue with the rest of my group. We were basically the queue. And then when a man comes into the shop, he goes to the front of the queue, pays, and leaves. And okay, as women, we don't rank here at all. And like in the restaurants, the three men that basically worked for us, they were seated first at the better tables. And then the group women got a table a bit further away. They got served first. And something very interesting that I also perceived in Siwa was that the men didn't like it, the waiters. If you hand them your empty plate, they get angry. I can still not understand it, but maybe it was, you know, they see that you don't honor their job or that they're doing their job right, or I don't know. And meditation is basically forbidden. So we are not allowed to meditate at the sacred places. You have to bribe the priests. And you bribe them, and then they will come and interrupt you anyway because the next people who bribe them is waiting. And you won't get your experience necessarily. So it's something interesting to navigate. And then the men that took us on the safari in the desert, we stopped somewhere and they took out their carpets and they prayed. But we didn't actually realize because they were behind the cars. And I just saw, oh, this is what they're doing. I thought they were stopping for us, you know. And then later when we were watching the sunset, I led a meditation with the goddess Isis while the sun was setting. And they don't shut up. You know, they just don't have respect for that we want to meditate. But then I realized, but we don't have respect for when they pray. It's not like we went and sat somewhere and be quiet so that they could pray. And I'm sure they are used to praying in a busy place, but you know, there needs to be honor from both sides. And there's such a culture divide that I felt really alien. And it was very interesting that it's men that clean the rooms in the hotels. It's mostly men that work everywhere. In Cairo, there were some women at the desks, who you can see they are much more westernized in a way. But overall, you can see that men get the jobs. And we experienced a lot of almost, I don't want to say racism, but it felt like that at the one hotel. But I think it also has to do, you can't really blame the waiters or the people that clean the rooms, that, you know, it depends on who runs the place and how they are treated and guided as to how to treat tourists. Because I think there's a lot of tourists coming through there that's used to getting everything they want in the way they want it. So you can understand that. But even when you try and smile at them and treat them nicely, you know, it's difficult because they don't understand what you're trying to order. I tried endlessly to order a cappuccino with almond milk or any non-dairy milk. And they would nod and go away and either never get it.
Mm.
And I was okay with that, but I'm sure that doesn't go well with all the tourists. But I think the management doesn't guide the people in the right way, because that wasn't at all of the hotels. It was only at the one specific one where we really experienced that very intense.
How did you find the food and everyday circumstances?
Oh, the food was amazing. As a vegan, I can live there. Because, yes, there is meat, and they do serve meat, but it's always sort of separate. So you can quite easily order anything or just go with what they bring, because they just bring different bowls of stuff and rice, and you put it together, but the meat is separate. So the vegetable dishes was amazing. You know, it's not like I haven't been to India, but, you know, I'm always very careful of too spicy food because my intestines can't handle that. And that's what I loved of Egypt. When it's only vegetables, it's not curry or it's not spicy. You know, even in South Africa, when you order something vegan, it tends to be really spicy because that's the way, only way they believe they can give a taste.
Mm.
And I can't eat that. So Egypt was perfect. But we were warned to not eat the fresh fruit because it can be washed with the water, which is not drinkable. And this is why you have to take Imodiums and stuff. And it's difficult because I'm used to getting the fruit, you know.
Mm.
And the one morning where we were on the bus quite early, we were packed a little breakfast, and it was an apple and a muffin and I think a juice. I can't eat a muffin because it's gluten. And I didn't think, and I ate the apple. And I was sick for 4 days.
Oh, shame.
But my body is also very sensitive to changing energy. So I don't think it was only that. I think it was the intensity of the spiritual places and also the intensity of the change in energy. So my body is very susceptible to a lot of these things. So I often get sick also because my immune system is out of whack. So I'm always prepared to get sick when I do go somewhere.
And speaking of spiritual places, let's look at some of the highlights of your trip. I remember in our pre-talk you mentioned places that touched you deeply, which included the Nile, the Temple of Philae, and meeting Sekhmet in the Chapel of Ptah. Firstly, the Nile.
Yeah, I think I already gave that away. The Nile, you know, so you're thinking, I'm going to Egypt. I'm going to have such powerful experiences because that's sort of the norm for me. You know, I have deeply intense spiritual experiences. And now you're going to a place where these gods and goddesses existed on some level. We don't really know, you know, whether they were physically real, but when you get there, you can feel the energy. So I was waiting for those powerful, they're going to appear to me and they're going to give me messages or whatever. But on the Nile, I think that inner shift of that beauty of Grandmother Gaia, Mother Nature, and just that feeling of being supported and held and guided really activated something in me. And that also with what we're still going to talk about with some of the goddess energies and things, it's like my femininity changed. Now, I think you were one of the people that said from my photos on social media that you could see the shift in me.
Yes.
I wasn't aware of that shift. I was just having fun. But what I realized was my behavior changed as to how I perceived my femininity. I'm very shy, and I'm very shy of my body. And because of my illness, I can't properly exercise, and I've gained a lot of weight because of it. So I'm very sensitive, and I actually never owned a bathing suit. I just bought one to go and swim with the dolphins a year or so back. So we were told to bring bathing suits because we were going to swim in this salt lake. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll just sit on the sideline and decide whether I'm brave enough to actually do that. But it's like the feminine empowerment just happened. And although I'm really not looking my best, I just didn't care.
Mm.
I felt so free and empowered. And I must say, I felt it also in the people there, because they don't necessarily look at people who are perfect, because their women wear all these clothes. They don't show off their bodies. You know, they respect their bodies and the sanctity of their bodies. And that was sort of honored in our behavior. You could see that, because now I've got this swimsuit that's like, you know, it's like a bicycle shorts plus a full top and everything. And you could really see that not only there, but like on the boat and in other places, the men reacted not by the way you looked, but by what you radiated. It felt to me like, I think the sexuality in Egypt is very suppressed as well, because women are covered up or doesn't come into public. So I think for some of the men, especially on the boat, we are these weird creatures that live our femininity. We dance around, you know, we do yoga on the deck while they are busy with the sails. And I think that was like, to them, it's like an eye-opener. But the men that you could feel are more spiritually evolved, they reacted to that confidence in a different way, if it makes sense.
Mm.
It's like they felt that that was attractive. And that made me feel, you know, much more empowered in who I am, no matter what my body presents.
And then, Belinda, secondly, the Temple of Philae. Could you talk to us about that?
Oh, my goodness. The Temple of Philae was actually more in a valley close to Aswan. So you go there on a boat. It's a space where they created a dam. So the temple was moved from where it stood to a higher ground so that it wouldn't be covered by the dam. But just being on that water and seeing the rock formations, and the way the sun shone on these rocks, it was like, okay, I used to call this home. It's just like you just realize something so familiar, so like home, that you can't wait to just get there. And although the temple was moved, it was built block for block. And there's a lot of kittens and cats around in the temple, and those temple guards had a lot of respect for their cats, and they looked beautiful, well taken care of. And, you know, again, it's just unexplainable, but I could feel the memories. I could see women laughing and joking and praying together and dancing together. And I've had a strong connection to the goddess Isis since I was 35 years old. And this temple is dedicated to Isis and Osiris. And there used to be this pathway which we went to go and see, which is still now part of the dam, where she would rise and walk through this pathway to be with Osiris every morning. And just that feminine beauty of joy and fulfillment, that was just the energy there. And I thought, I would move here tomorrow. But, yeah, you know, when you have that remembrance of something, and whether it's your own past life memory or whether it's something that you can tune into and feel familiar with, I don't claim that I was there, whatever, but I think in a way we all have aspects that have experienced something in different countries. And then there's just some places where you know, I walked here, I served here, I cleaned here. And it's quite overwhelming to go into that humility and then realize where you are now and how you have evolved as a soul into the life where you are now. And that also helps you to reevaluate the way you perceive your life and maybe aren't happy with your life.
That sounds like a profound experience.
It definitely was. And I'm sure you're going to ask me next about the Temple of Ptah and Sekhmet.
Yes.
So I basically thought, okay, I'm going to connect to Osiris and Isis because I've got a strong connection with them and with the god Anubis, because everything in my life is always about death as well. The work I do, and the angels call me somebody that is like a go-between between life and death, between the spirit world and the waking world. Now, I always find myself attracted in different cultures to the energies or the gods, goddesses that were connected to that. And they always communicate with me and guide me. So Anubis and Osiris are very strongly connected to that aspect. And Isis is known as a magician, a healer, a woman who's resurrected her husband because of love. And then I learned about Sekhmet and Hathor. So Sekhmet was the aspect before she became Hathor. And the creator god Ra, or Amun-Ra, I experienced him at a temple close to Cairo, actually. But the story is that Sekhmet, the lion-headed goddess, got so angry at the people because they started disrespecting Ra that she went into a bloodthirst rage and started destroying people, just killing them all over. And I'm sure we feel like that. Not that we will really do it, but you know, when you meet some egocentric people or you see the state of our world and how people are abusing our world and animals, I can surely understand the Sekhmet energy. So Sekhmet has this strong destroyer goddess fighting for what is right and for honor. And then the story is that Amun-Ra felt that she was out of control. And with some of the other gods and goddesses, they created red wine. And they fed Sekhmet red wine so that she would think it's blood and that she would become meek and pass out. And then she became Hathor, which is the cow-headed goddess. And when you see those cows on the bank of the Nile River, having their wild, free lives, you just stand in awe at that peace, that beauty. So Hathor was a very mother-like goddess, feeding her milk to her children, to the creation. But so Sekhmet, very intense, and we went to this special place. It's also at the Temple of Karnak in Luxor. But they take you way in the back to this Temple of Ptah. And of course, Belinda never knows what's happening on which day, so I'm always surprised, which is always fun. And we were supposed to each have time alone with this statue of Sekhmet, which is in a very dark little room with just a little light shining through a hole in the ceiling. And I mean, this temple is like thousands and thousands of years old, and here's this statue still standing. And you can feel her priestesses walking around. But unfortunately, on that day, there was a lot of tourists, and these temple guards are just irritating beyond any explanation. So we were busy in there, and everybody was supposed to get a chance to go alone. Luckily, my friend got a chance to go in alone. She was the first one to go in. But by the time it was my turn, we had to go in three at a time, four at a time, because the temple guard was starting to get irritated because his next money is arriving. And I went in, I think, with three other ladies. And, I mean, it's a statue. So you go in, oh, I'm going to see this statue. But, oh, my God. When those eyes looked into me, it was like, this is not just a statue. This is a presence. And whereas a lot of the other ladies experienced her anger, destructive energy, almost like bringing up their fears, my friend actually went out saying she feels quite irritated at what she experienced. But when I went in, all I got was, I've got you. And that was all I needed. I turned and I walked out. And I was so emotional. I think you might have seen the video I made and shared right afterwards. Mm. Because I was just so awestruck. And, you know, when you look at it from a Christian perspective or maybe other religions as well, it's like, this is blasphemy. Destroy the freaking thing. But, you know, I believe that Father God has a lot of male aspects that we can perceive through different energies, even within ourselves. And the Mother God aspect has a lot of feminine energies. And, I mean, no entity is only love, only pure. And these expressions are also part of us, the hatred energy, the anger energy. And we don't necessarily give into it, but it needs understanding. It felt like Sekhmet created in me the knowing that I'm also allowed to get angry. I'm allowed to feel that I want to destroy, even if I don't give into it. I'm allowed to be angry at neighbors that don't respect my sanctity. And I'm allowed to get angry at men that don't respect women. And things like that. So there's the balance. And because we experience this as our dark sides, we suppress it. But that's when it explodes. That's when it becomes destructive. And then afterwards, as we moved more towards the temples that were dedicated to Hathor, and there's lots of them because she's this beautiful cow-headed mother goddess. It was just so beautiful to get that understanding that you can go from that destruction to complete motherly divine love, compassion and forgiveness. And it really made me think as to how we can harness that for ourselves.
Belinda, you've also told me that the pyramids affected you greatly.
Yeah, you know, almost in a sad way. When we went to, well, we went the first evening to meditate between the feet of the Sphinx. It was beautiful and surreal. It was full moon. You could see the energy around it. I actually have a photograph that I've taken of the Sphinx where it looks like thunder strikes around it. So the energy was very, very palpable. But we were still new to the group. And it was difficult for me to connect into the meditation because I felt the people around me who were strangers. I still had to adapt and sort of file the energy to the background before I could have my full experiences. But I mean, I walked around that Sphinx and brushed her tail. It was quite profound. The sadness is that it's basically on the city. You can see the buildings from the Sphinx. And the next day when we went to the plateau with a lot of other tourists, wasn't midday. I remember 11:11, we walked very fast to come to the line, the energy line between the two big pyramids, and it was just super amazing. But what I felt there was a haunting sadness. It was like something in me just felt, look at what has become. Look at the downfall. There's no respect. There's no love. There's no understanding anymore. And yes, the pyramids are a money-making machine. But to me, it wasn't as powerful a spiritual experience as I thought. The next morning when we went into the big pyramid, I'm forgetting its name now. And, that day when we were on the plateau, Osiris came to me and he said to me, "People are strange." And I said, "Why?" And he says, "You're praying to something that we use basically like a factory." And I said to him, "Well, do you find it funny that we do that? Do you disrespect us for it?" And he said, "No. He has honor for those who respect that which has come before, which can teach and guide them to believe in more and to create more and to create something in line with beauty and what the human race can become."
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can express your love for your partner, leave a legacy to your children or grandchildren, honor your mum or dad or a mentor. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest.
So that evening, I was really sick. I was vomiting. My tummy was running. Nothing wanted to stop it. I mean, I was taking Imodiums like you cannot believe. The stomach cramps were so, so bad, nothing else. And I was lying there. But, you know, this is what I tell people. This is where yoga comes in and why I still do yoga, although I'm in a lot of pain, because yoga teaches you to overcome the mind chatter, the fear, because your mind will tell you, I can't do this. But when you do, well, I do Kundalini yoga, so I don't know about the other yogas. But when you teach your mind and your body, you teach your mind to calm, you teach your body to notice what the mind is thinking, but you override it and you keep going and you try harder. It's not to push you too far. It's to find that space where you call on your own bullshit that really you think you can't. Just go a bit further. Just try a bit more. You know, and what 15, 20 years of yoga has taught me is that mind over matter. When you ask or train the mind to show up, the body will show. So now I've only experienced Cairo so far. So I'm like, I never want to return to this place. I'm only going to see the inside of the pyramid once. This is your one chance, Belinda. And so then I say to the body, okay, if you show up for me in this, the rest of the day, I will give you what you need. I will show up for you. I will be there for you. And throughout this trip, whatever you need. And so I think we had to be at the bus at 2 a.m. to be inside the pyramid at 3. And we had 2 hours until 5 a.m. in the pyramid. So I didn't want to eat anything, obviously, for obvious reasons, because there's no toilet around. But my body works in this way, because now I had to take an Imodium before as well. And then it lies in my stomach, and then I get gas. And that becomes tremendous pain, from which I often pass out. So, you know, I had to make sort of conscious choices and hope for the best. Mm. So we went inside, and I didn't know that we were going to go down to the subterranean chamber. Now, on a good day, my body is stiff and sore, but I'm prepared for this. If you have to crawl, you crawl. You just get down there. And you go down far, and you go down backward. It's just get that mind over matter. Just keep going, you know. Don't think about what will happen to the person underneath you when you fall.
Mm.
But you just keep going. And then we crawled into a space, and it was a subterranean chamber, and it's extremely hot and so humid in there. And I'm not feeling myself, and I'm like lying against some of the rock which has been excavated. And my new friend, Julie, thought I was channeling this rock, and she actually took a photo.
Oh.
And I told her, like, no, that was just me trying to stay upright.
Mm.
So they all sat down. Well, first my friend saw that I wasn't doing well. And, you know, she sort of checked with me with eye movements, and I shook my head, and she came and she just helped me to sit down on the ground. Because now this pain on my stomach became so bad that I knew I was going to pass out. But we left our bags up there. So I did have like a little energy bar that Julie gave to me, but it was in my bag up there.
Mm.
So either you sit here with this pain and try to stay conscious, or you go through that all again while everybody's meditating, and you get the hell up there and you take a bite. So I crawl and I go up with this pain. And another lady followed me, I didn't see, and she's actually Australian, and she's a nurse. And she said she could also not stay in there. So she crawled behind me. I didn't know. I was just going. I need to get to that energy ball.
Mm.
And when I got up there, she was behind me, and I took a bite, and we went to sit outside of the pyramid. On some of the stones, and these dogs sleeping on the pyramid. So you can go and say, they don't even care that you're there. So we sat outside and just breathing that fresh morning air with the full moon. Oh, it was spectacular. And then I had to decide when the others came up, am I now going to go to the Queen's Chamber and the King's Chamber? But, you know, you've got one chance. So I went. And in the Queen's Chamber, you know, I thought we would like chant and work up the energy. But I don't actually know what they did. We were just there in the Queen's Chamber and I was just against the wall trying to feel something, but I couldn't feel any spiritual energy. So I felt really sort of, well, okay, so I got up for this. Then we went into the King's Chamber and I basically passed out on the floor.
Oh, no.
So the others took turns to get into the sarcophagus while Michelle and some of the other ladies were making ethereal sounds with some weird instruments. I was just gone. I don't know what was happening. I just tuned out. I think I was in another dimension or something. And then at some point, I must have been so attuned to my friend because I realized she's getting in the sarcophagus and I better go and take a photo. So I got up, I took a photo, and then I saw, oh, but other people are taking photos. So I went back and my spot was, you could see my body sweat on the floor of the outprint. A Belinda sweat angel in the King's Chamber.
Mm.
And I just lay back onto that and passed out again. And then in the end, you know, the 2 hours were almost up and we had to quickly get into the sarcophagus to get a chance. So I was last one in, lay there a bit, tried to tune in, but then I had to go again. So it wasn't the perfect experience, but I think it was the experience that I needed to have, that there is an energy vibration, but it didn't necessarily feel spiritual to me. It felt more like this is an energy generating machine and it's making me pass out.
Mm.
So we can't claim to understand what it was used for. Maybe it was used for tombs, but we don't actually have a clue.
Belinda, your life is profoundly interwoven with nature and animals. Are there any animal stories from your journey?
I think, you know, nature has been my mother since I was a little child. I would always escape into nature, go and sit, communicate with the ants, the plants, the trees. That's always my safe space. And, you know, I had this thing, like I said, that there's going to be hardship. You're going to see animals that are not in a good state. You're going to see kids that are begging and poor and hungry. And that wasn't my experience at all. The kids that were begging wore like Nikes and Reeboks, some of them. You know, they didn't look poor or hungry. And Muhammad explained to me, he said, these kids are actually supposed to be in school. Their parents don't know they're here. And I learned the Arabic word for school. And whenever they would approach me, I would tell them to go to school. But, you know, the animals. I saw one dog that was skinny. So in Cairo, yes, everywhere in Egypt, the dogs are everywhere. But what I saw was that most of them are free. They don't really care about the people. They just go about their business, doing their own stuff. They didn't look scrawny. The dogs at the pyramids and temples are fed by the guards because they help protect it, because those places are huge. So they help to make the guards aware at night if people are doing something they're not supposed to be doing. And the dogs didn't ever beg. I thought they would be begging for food. They didn't. They're just there. They don't really care about you. I followed one dog through a temple at Karnak. You might remember the video. I was just walking behind it. It was just swaying its little butt. And one person on Facebook told me, oh, look at those bones sticking out. Somebody feared it. There was no bones sticking out. We are spoiled. Our animals are spoiled. And we did go to an animal hospital where things were very, very bad. But when we found out it was a hospital, that changed everything. Because some of those donkeys and horses were like 30 years old.
Mm.
And it's against the law to put them down. So the lady explained to me they use anesthetics when an animal really needs to be put down, but they don't use it on the old animals unless it's really needed, because they only get a limited amount. And because it's illegal, you know, if they do it too often, it will be noticed. But again, the Nile, we anchored on the side of the Nile every evening. I got up every morning to go and do yoga with sunrise. And I just said to the group, listen, I'm going to do it for me. Whoever wants to join is welcome. And we were about 8 ladies every morning. Some of the days that the guys also showed up, you know, and then you see the cattle and you see the dogs just lounging around watching the cattle, and they're having their own lives. There's hardly people around. And wherever we went and we stopped, the guys on the boat would give the dogs like breadsticks and things like that. But it was almost like they didn't even want to come and get it. They were not desperate, you know.
Mm.
When you go into Cairo, into the market, there's cats everywhere. There's doggies as well. And, you know, the people just leave them. I've seen people calling from the shops, calling a doggy inside for food. These water bowls everywhere outside the shops for the animals. When we sat on the bus, I saw people walking past the cats, and they would open their water bottles and offer them water in the cabs. Or a man would just be going about his business and touching a cat, passing him by while the cat was sitting on a little pillow or something. You know, they are so integrated.
Mm.
And yes, they are not necessarily pets, but they are a presence, and they are it's like they are just integrated together. And we can't understand that because, again, we are spoiled and we have a certain idea as to what should be. And Muhammad explained to me that, you know, most of the dogs have homes, but there's just not space enough for a dog at the home. So they get food at home, and then they just go off and do their thing. And then a lot of the cats stay at home. So you could see hardship. You could see some of the donkeys. But then I realized, but the person also looked like that.
Oh.
They were giving the donkey as much as they were giving themselves.
Mm.
It really made me think differently about our township dogs. And, you know, we just want to save everything, but do they really need saving?
Yeah.
Aren't they having a more free life than we can imagine? And Muhammad had such an impact on me because he saw my wolf cards. And he told me stories about wolves in Egypt. I'm like, no, there's no wolves in Egypt. He says, yes, at my village, I grew up with them.
Goodness.
I would see them every day. And he told me a story from when he was a little boy. He told a friend that he was going to take one of the cubs and raise it as its own. And so one day he stole a cub when the mom wasn't in the den. And he took it home and he put it in a little thing. And he said the whole night the mom was screaming. And he said he couldn't take it the next day. He took the cub back and he put it close to the den and he waited to see if the mother would take it back. And he said the mother was watching him. And when he was far enough away, she came and she took back her cub. And, you know, the way of them understanding and integrating with nature had a powerful effect on me. Even the men on the boat, the one morning we were doing yoga and I heard a cat screaming. And suddenly it went silent, and I ran to the side of the boat. I thought they threw the cat overboard. And I was in a state, and Muhammad said, no, please, I'll go and find out. Because he was doing yoga with us that day. And the guy came up with the kit and he said, no, it's my cat, it's my cat. You know, so we have this misconception and we go with that experience and we want to go and fight against something, save something. But if you go and you learn and you allow, it just transforms you in a way that I cannot explain. And that's how nature spoke to me in a different way. And that I'm trying to allow myself to understand that, you know, the things that we want to save or control or make fat and healthy, that's not always the order of things or the way it's supposed to be. They're in the desert. These jackals and those wolves, and I mean, there's nothing green anywhere. You cannot imagine what they live on, but they do. And they don't need us for that.
Yeah. Is there any other experience you'd still like to share with us?
I would love to share my experience of the desert because I always say that I don't like hot places and places where there's no green, because to me that's nature. But I must say in the desert, I experienced another aspect of nature, the profound beauty of that endless sand. But in Siwa, there's this temple of the oracle, and they don't actually know how old it is. But the legends are that there was a woman, one or maybe more, and they don't know whether they were kept there against their will or whether they just resided there. But they were the oracles, and people and leaders and anyone would come to them. They wouldn't see them. They would be in little rooms. The people would enter and they would get this answer. But of course, you know, as you always see in the movies, oracles always gives you something more like a question than an answer or a rhyme or a riddle that you have to figure out. The story Muhammad told us there, and remember, this temple is also built from that desert sand full of fossils. So as you move through it, you could see the walls are from this mud, from the sand, that was mixed with straw and things, but also then with, you can see the fossils in it with the shells and things. So we went up into the temple, but one of the other ladies then had a stomach issue and she called me aside and I helped her out to take care of things where she could. And I actually missed quite a lot of the talk. But then I went in and there was like a little crevice kind of room. And I went in there and the sun sort of shines on you while you are in there. And I asked the oracle a question. And I actually felt her taking me on a journey through a very dark place. And she said to me, you know you have to go through this. But when you get to the other side, the oasis will be there. It might make me quite emotional. And then she also said, but listen to the wind. It will whisper to you your truth. And then when I went out, my friend called me and she said to me, you missed all of it. You have to go and stand on that corner. And now we're like on the roof, like at the top. It's also, it's falling down a bit as well, but you know, you're standing there and you can see the whole oasis around you and all the palm trees. It's surreal. And she said, just go and stand there. And she went off to catch up with the others. And as I stood there, the wind started blowing around me and through my hair. And I just heard the wind saying to me, take me home and I will guide you. And again, nature. I mean, we can talk about gods and goddesses and spirit guides and whatever, but nature. How have we forgotten to live in harmony, to allow our hearts beat to the beat of nature, to be present. We won't feel abandoned or separate if we don't keep ourselves separate. So to me, that was another profound experience, which I think that only that place where I thought I didn't want to be, could open up to.
Thank you, Belinda. What would you say to someone considering taking a similar trip?
I would definitely say don't go alone. Make sure that you are with a group of people, either family or on a tour. Make sure you have a proper guide who can explain to you the way things work, the customs of the people, and what is expected in terms of bribes and things like that. There are some of the markets where you have to be very careful, especially women alone. The men from the stall sort of swarms you. And we had a situation where the men that were with us had to help a lady to be removed from that. But I must say, we felt quite protected with the three men that were with us. They were constantly there and present and watching that everybody was coming. And, you know, because you can get sidetracked. You see these stuff, these dresses and things hanging there, and then you want to go towards it, but it's not safe. Because as soon as they get their hooks into you, they don't let you go until you buy something. They harass you. And Muhammad really took us to shops where we could safely explore with a loving family in their business, you know. The clothes shop where Muhammad took us, I didn't have much shopping to do. So I bought something. If we've got time, I want to tell the story. Is this okay?
Yes.
So we were in this linen shop owned by a family, and Muhammad knows the family. And Muhammad is a Sufi, so they are also Muslims. I don't have the knowledge, but it feels to me like the Sufis are a bit more, they're not as restricted in the way they view a woman's role. Muhammad has a wife that's also an archaeological professor, and she helps to restore some of the temples. He has three girls who's studying. So they are quite open-minded, but very, very spiritual. So I was in the shop and I wanted to buy the dress, and then I saw handbags. In South Africa, because I'm vegan, I struggle to get handbags that I like that's not leather or fake leather or something that's nice material, still beautiful. So I saw this handbag from linen and embroidered with the Eye of Horus, beautiful. And I was trying to explain to the guy that I want the handbag, but that I don't want the leather strap attached to it. And you can unhook it quite easily, but he couldn't understand. This is camel leather, you know. I said, yeah, but it's against my religion. That's the only way they understand it, is if you say, but it's my religion to not do it. Then they honor, they respect that. But Muhammad saw that I was talking to this guy and we were trying to sort this out, because the guy didn't want to sell me the handbag without a strap. So Muhammad came closer to see if there was a disagreement or something, or whether he could help to translate. But the guy then left to go and search for another strap. And after that, the whole shop was just, you know, these Persian carpets that we are used to, that we buy for a lot of money. They're just thrown on the shop floors everywhere, even in the desert, in the oasis, these carpets on which you can sit. I'm like, wow, this is a really nice carpet. But anyway, so Muhammad and I just sat on the floor in the shop while all the other ladies were busy, and he told me the story about the wolves and his grandfather and his horse. And, you know, and I think this is the profound thing about the people. And maybe what you did want to ask me about connections I've made. Yes, I've made connections with some of the women in the group. But the connections that I made through nature and with some of the people that I experienced, I didn't get to meet a lot of women there, but the men that we experienced and the profound wisdom that changed a lot for me. And it doesn't mean I agree with everything they said, because Muhammad believes that it's okay to eat meat, you know, that animals serve us if we honor them. And, you know, I'm open to, we'll agree to disagree. But just to experience the respect they have for every living thing, and the respect they have for the other humans and their place and their experience within the whole, and to have understanding for that, to experience that wisdom was almost like being with a teacher all the time, a very wise teacher. And if you can travel with somebody like that, that has this experience and this wisdom into Egyptology and the spiritual background, that kind of trip to Egypt will change your life. But don't go alone, and don't try and navigate your way alone. There's too many people who will take advantage of you. Unfortunately, there's many.
Thank you, Belinda. I'd like to mention that we're going to include photographs from your trip in the podcast notes. So if listeners would like to see them, and they're listening on Spotify or Google Podcasts or other platforms, just find the link that says this episode's podcast notes and photographs. Now, on a different matter, amongst the many podcasts you and I have recorded, one focused on the experiences you had with a group you took to Ireland. This year, you're offering a pilgrimage to Scotland. Tell us more about this.
Yes. Oh, I'm getting really excited about this, because I can really feel nature guiding us in this. To me, my pilgrimages is always about, no, it's not where I decide to go. It's where spirit tells me to go. So I call it my assignments. My next assignment is to Scotland. And after coming back from Egypt, it was very difficult to detach from the Egypt energy, because now I'm thinking of also planning on to Egypt. And to come back to the Scotland energy, which is in complete contrast. But now getting myself back to that excitement of Scotland, I can feel that energy being woven into me. And I can feel a really tribal energy as well. Grandmother Gaia has been guiding me to express myself more through chants and voice and sound. I still don't know how. Maybe it will be drumming or some kind of instrument. I don't know. But it feels like Scotland will be taking us to a next level of experience with nature. Now, you need to remember, like with Ireland, it is nature in full force. And Scotland will go to all of the outer islands to find those ancient stone circles. So you will experience aspects of nature that you don't understand yet. And I'm very excited about that, because having all of those aspects of nature within stone circles that are made because of their resonance and the energy buildup and the memories that they keep and the profound healing abilities that they share with us. I mean, I'm just excited for myself. I can just imagine, because when there's more people showing up with the same intention, we create a greater vibration. So I'm still very excited to see who will be joining in. We are 9 ladies so far, so there's still a couple of seats left open. But it promises to be profound.
Where can people get information? Would that be on your Facebook page, or where would that be?
For easy access, I would say just send me an email at angelmessages@telkomsa.net, and then I can send you the itinerary and booking details and all further information.
And I was going to ask where listeners can learn more about your work and follow you.
They're welcome to follow me on Facebook and Instagram, just Belinda Brasnell. And they can also contact me on WhatsApp at 082-929-8938. I've got WhatsApp groups as well where I share my daily inspirations and courses or workshops or retreats or special offers or everything and anything that I am offering at that stage, like full moon meditation tonight. You know, often I just feel inspired or the angels ask me to do something today and then I do it. So if you are on that group, or on my Facebook or Instagram, you will get those notifications. They can also follow me on YouTube, where we started publishing a series of my channelings of Grandmother Gaia and profound information that she came to share that just left me flabbergasted every time. So that's all available for free on my YouTube channel, Angel Messages.
Thank you, Belinda. And what I'll do is I'll include all these links and the WhatsApp number in the podcast notes. What I'd like to know is if I can ask you a fun question.
Yes.
We're going to the realm of the imagination, so you need not be practical. If, Belinda, in an ideal world, you could have a new front door made of any material in any color or shape, what would it look like?
Oh, wood.
Wood.
Yeah, like an old wooden door with a brass handle and hinges, and as if you're walking into a tree. Yeah, mystical and weird.
I can see a picture in my mind's eye.
Me too.
Thank you, Belinda, for sharing with us your experiences. I know very little about Egypt, and what you have shared has made me realize what wonderful experiences one can have there. Thank you.
And thank you for giving people this platform to share their story with others and that others might be inspired. Thank you.
And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear, and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mark Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9.